Welcome. This interview is sponsored by Progressive Administration, and with me is MD Thomas van Sail, who is here to talk about voluntary liquidation. Welcome, Thomas.
Thanks very much.
Firstly, is voluntary liquidation better than deregistration?
I think whether it's better or not is a difficult question, but I think it's becoming more advantageous to members of the public or directors that hold directorships in various entities, and to go through the process of deregistration is not necessarily complicated, but it's cumbersome, and it also requires assistance with auditors. You certainly need them to sign off, and then you need to go through the SARS requirements, and that's where the advantages of a voluntary liquidation actually play quite a big role.
What are those advantages? Would you mind listing them for us?
Yeah, no problem. So I think the biggest advantage of a voluntary liquidation is that it brings finality to the company. And because it brings finality, it kind of closes the file on any future claims made by creditors. And I think the biggest one is the personal liability that directors face or could face. A lot of the times, directors are not the accountants. They're not the auditors. And when you go through a process of deregistration, you're relying on those accountants or auditors, or in fact, your bookkeepers. And sometimes that information is not correct. And if you deregister a company, it doesn't close the company down. It kind of leaves it in limbo, and creditors and SARS is often the biggest creditor, they can come along in future and they can reinstate the business, and they can then institute claims as well as personal claims that you wouldn't even have been aware of. And that's where voluntary liquidation, I think, plays the biggest role or offers the biggest advantage. It forces everyone to come around the table. It forces a closing of the file at least up until the date of the voluntary liquidation, and it ring fences things, and it forces everything to be dealt with then and there, and then after that it's closed.
So, what does the process involve if somebody opts for it?
Well, it's quite simple. It's certain resolutions that are required. Those resolutions need to be completed. There's a what we call a CM100. It's more of a statement of affairs that detail the assets, the company's assets and liabilities, and those documents need to be submitted to the CIPC. And once they're filed, the company gets given a certificate called the CM26 LIQ certificate, which places the company under voluntary liquidation. And that process can take, I mean, here at Progressive Administration, we can do it in 3 days, where a deregistration can take months.
That was what I was going to ask you. How quickly can it happen?
Yeah. So, I mean, to go through a deregistration, you also have to file resolutions. You have to get your auditors to tie up proverbial loose ends. You've got to get a SARS clearance certificate. So those are all things that are somewhat out of your control, I suppose. And that's what makes the process take longer. Again, a voluntary liquidation, we can have it actioned in 3 days.
Please give us some case studies, examples of where this has happened and where it worked in favor of the client.
So we obviously work with a number of auditors, and no disrespect to SARS, but they are becoming somewhat trickier to deal with. Rightly so, I would imagine. And what we're finding is we have audit firms that are coming to us that have a large number of clients that are wanting to deregister their companies. Now, I think it's worthwhile just mentioning that if the company in question has remained dormant throughout its life, that should be a deregistration, because there's nothing there that could be an obstacle, I suppose. I mean, where in cases where the company did trade and is now dormant, that is where I think it is easier for directors to proceed with a voluntary liquidation than a deregistration. But to answer your question, to give you some case studies, I mean, we've got a number of different voluntary liquidations where the process was started for a deregistration, and about 2 months later, when letters of demand were coming from creditors they either didn't know about or they'd forgotten about, it just threw the whole process upside down. And we see that happening quite a lot, where people in those positions come to us and they say, what do we do now?
Can you give us specific cases without mentioning names or company names?
Well, I mean, there are a few specific cases. We have an auditor that has got a number of clients that are in the process of deregistration, but they're not able to get the tax clearance certificates because SARS has flagged some historic liability, or they've flagged something irregular, or they've just flagged that there's incomplete returns. There's so many things that we find is causing particularly SARS to not issue the certificate, the tax compliance certificate. I don't know if that answers your question, without naming company names.
I just read about a case in the agricultural sector where there has been many liquidations. How would that benefit a farmer?
Well, we have a farmer at the moment who has put his company under voluntary liquidation. And in that particular case, he was exporting grapes to Israel. And given the war that broke out between Gaza and Israel, he was unable to export his grapes, his table grapes, to Israel. And it just took, the liquidation process came about because of one harvest where he was unable to secure buyers for his harvest, his produce. And that's put him into liquidation. But at that point, he was looking to sell the land, deregister the company, and go through that process. But just to get through the hoops of actioning that, it was far easier for them to put it under voluntary liquidation, force all the creditors to come to the table, engage with a liquidator, that where the liquidation process is run under the supervision of the master's office, and to bring finality sooner than it would have been if he undertook that himself or with his accountant or something like that.
With so many Ponzi schemes doing the rounds, have you had any experience with that?
Yes, we do. We've got a liquidation at the moment of a Ponzi scheme. It's the HGG case, or the HGG case. And it's a fascinating, fascinating case. It is your classic Ponzi scheme, where your new investors are investing the money, and that capital is being used essentially to pay distributions to old investors. But you know, we see in our market there's Ponzi schemes, your classic Ponzi schemes, and then there's your more complicated Ponzi schemes with cryptocurrencies and that type of thing as well.
And how would that work to the benefit of people who have lost money to the Ponzi scheme?
Well, I think the benefit of a liquidation, regardless of a voluntary liquidation, but a liquidation itself can allow for a inquiry to be held into the financial affairs. And that gives rise to what we often, we hear this term bandied about, but it provides for subpoena power. So the liquidators can then subpoena interested parties or creditors, or they could subpoena debtors or you name it, to obtain and extract information that is going to reveal where these people's monies have gone, essentially. And throughout our industry and liquidators, we are having inquiries all the time. And it is a very effective way. It's an expensive process and it's a lengthy process, but it is effective. You interrogate your witnesses and you get your information, and then you go from one stone to the other, or from one dot to the other, slowly connecting all of those dots.
Now, being a liquidator has become a very dangerous profession in South Africa, especially in the wake of some assassinations. What atmosphere are you working in?
Yes, it's a good question. I get asked that a lot. It can be very murky, especially in big liquidations and liquidations that have reach that go into your state enterprises or at least your government officials. We are currently involved in a liquidation where it's at a provisional liquidation at this stage. And there are stories here for days. There's bribery like you won't believe. And before the assassination of Clutha Murray and his son, I didn't think I would actually worry about anything like that. But I mean, we've now seen Bova van Niekerk being assassinated, a month ago. But we have liquidators that are threatened on a daily basis. I was on the phone this morning with a friend of mine who's a liquidator, and he received a death threat in an unrelated, a totally different matter. And, you know, now you take these things quite seriously. And it's nerve-wracking. It certainly is, yeah.
And how do you deal with people who feel they've been unfairly liquidated? When you know you've done everything the right way.
Well, you know, the one thing that gives us comfort is that whether it was me or another liquidator, the process remains the same. The steps of the winding up of the company, they remain the same. If there's to be an interrogation, there's going to be an interrogation, whether it's me or anybody else. So I think if you can explain this to the person, it certainly helps go a long way that where they can absorb the fact that there is a bigger process involved, and it's a process beyond whoever just that liquidator is. At least we try and explain that. But, you know, sometimes people don't care.
Well, whether it's a voluntary liquidation or a forced liquidation, it's a painful process for the people involved. What can you say to them?
Well, I think if you work with the liquidator, as opposed to trying to hide things from the liquidator, you will actually get to the end result. And I think we all take our eye off the ball as to what that end result is, and that is to try and obtain the biggest dividend for creditors as possible. And most of the time, we have creditors fighting with other creditors. We have one creditor trying to exert its rights over another. And at the end of the day, all it does is waste money, and it incurs delays and costs that are just could be completely avoided. So that's what, to answer your question, my message would be, let the process unfold and just work with the liquidator.
What's the biggest case you guys have handled?
Well, at the moment, it would be the Ponzi scheme, which is HGG or you could just Google it and you'll see all the shenanigans that have unfolded there. And here we have a case as well where the former director committed suicide in Amanus. And just after that, we had Marcus Uster committing suicide in Amanus. So Amanus is apparently, it's apparently the place to be if you're in a Ponzi scheme or something like that. But yeah, I would say HGG or HGG is probably the biggest case we have at the moment.
And what made you become a liquidator?
Well, I grew up in a liquidation environment. My grandmother worked at the master's office, and I can remember running through those halls when I was 5 or 6. Then my father became a liquidator, and he sadly passed away on the 25th of July, and I'm now a liquidator as well.
So it's a family business?
In a manner of speaking, it is a family business.
Okay. Thank you. That was Progressive Administration MD Thomas von Sail speaking to BizNews. I'm Chris Stane.